experience. I think you can experience it through other psychedelics with the dosages, but for a single one-off dose, there is nothing more powerful than 5-MeO, whether it's from the plant or the toad. I've found nothing else. I think it's the most beautiful thing, and I wish that every single person on the planet is able to do it at some point in their life. But honestly, it scares the shit out of me. It's a really, really powerful psychedelic, and I don't like how fast it's coming into our tribe and into our community. It's been rushed in, and too many people are doing it too fast, and they're not getting the support afterwards that they should have. It is not something that you just do and you feel great afterwards. It is a life changer. You can do it once, and some people never, ever, ever need to do it again. It gave them everything that they needed, you know? Other people, they can do it once. They can have an absolute beautiful experience. The experience is transcendental and divine for them. But the 3, 4, 5 weeks afterwards, 5 months afterwards can be incredibly traumatic if they haven't got support and a network around them that they can feel safe with that experience.
Just a beautiful segue to Maya and Dean specifically, because you guys have helped anchor a new Facebook support group, the Toad Testimonials and Support, which sprung up after the lightning struck in Byron Bay back in April last year, with a 5-MeO practitioner coming through. Maybe just tell us a little bit about your experience with 5-MeO and this support group of the community online.
Thanks, Rack. Yes, it was Dean's idea to birth a support page, which I endorsed and have been with ever since. I'm really grateful that it's there and it's helped us to network with the community at large. And it was inspired by the reality, as Shannon said, that this is very strong medicine, very powerful work, and that the more we can support ourselves and each other in relation to preparation, integration, and continuation, the more profound the integration is. And for me, that encompasses the purpose and calling that I feel is like the integration of these epiphanous states is essential for our well-being.
Maybe just so people know, though, because all you know, the classic psychedelics and entheogens are often said to be ego-dissolving, but 5-MeO does seem to be the Tyrannosaurus Rex of the entheogens, in that if you have a full breakthrough dose, you don't have to think that you're surrendering. There isn't a you left to surrender, and you can fight that, and that can create dissonance. But in the full release and in the remembrance, it is the most ego-dissolving drop rejoining the ocean experience that I have ever experienced. And that's why the integration is so important, isn't it? Because it's not just another ayahuasca ceremony, which is incredibly beautiful and sacred, but there's still fragments of ego which are navigating that journey. In this one, you have gone to God, baby.
That's absolutely correct. Again, like what Shannon said, this is right at the top, as far as like the star on top of the Christmas tree. So it's important to have a healthy tree, to have a good foundation. And when I had my first experience, it was the closest thing I can recall is birth and death. So yes, it is the most direct access to source that I've ever experienced, other than very intimate near-death experiences in my childhood. And if we have these cracking open moments and we are frivolous with that, then it can cause immense discombobulation, and that's not what we're after ultimately.
Dean, what was your experience and why did you want to set up the Toad Testimonials and Support?
Yes, well, you know, when we had the visit last year by Octavio, I don't think it's fine to mention who's who. Octavio's traveling the world, sharing the medicine with everyone, and he's, you know, basically turned all of us onto it, and it's been incredible, amazing. What I realised is that his probably main focus is to get the medicine out there, and I felt, you know, we felt that what needed was a support group to help, where somewhere people could go to talk about, you know, what had happened, to, you know, share any stories about, you know, what they were going through, basically to form a community to support people in this, what is undoubtedly the most extreme experience I think you could ever have in this lifetime. It's interesting because just before we go too far into where we can go with this, I just want to mention that about 20 years ago, I was in a similar situation after coming back from the Amazon and experiencing ayahuasca, and then meeting DARPS over here and talking about ayahuasca and going, wow, this thing is coming out. And then also noticing that there's some people who weren't being guided in the proper use or the cultural use of it. So, you know, we had a meeting and we said, well, is it time to make a, you know, I want to make a film about it because that's what I do, I'm a documentary filmmaker. And it was discussed and said, yeah, okay, it's time to make a cultural film. A film about ayahuasca, about the cultural use, about some of the problems associated with it, about the Western use of it. And so we did that, and that's called Shamans of the Amazon, which I'm sure a lot of people have seen here. So just on that, what I'd like to say is now we're at another stage where the toad is hopped into our reality. Probably 12 months ago, no one knew about it. I didn't really know about it. I heard something about it, but it's hopped into our reality. It's incredible, but it's also, there's a shadow side to it as well, which, you know, needs to be addressed and looked into, and ways of, you know, doing things to support people and also put out the information as well about, the best way to prepare or use or not use it. So I was called to make another documentary called The God Molecule and the Shamanic Toad, which I'm happy to announce. I launched the crowdfunding campaign this morning on Indiegogo platform. And, I turned it on, but now I'm actually anchoring and launching it in. So if anyone wants to... I think Jonna was going to stick that page up there. But if you go to thegodmolecule.movie.com, there's also a copy there too of Shamans of the Amazon. So if you haven't seen it, I'm putting a free copy up there as well. So you can, you know, look at that film and also see what I plan to do, which is go and talk to a lot of the practitioners. And, it's been great talking to Shannon too, who's spent a lot of time, with the medicine and talking to a lot of practitioners and getting a good overview of what's happening now, and also look at the historical use of 5-MeO. So it's not just the toad, it's the God molecule, which, you know, it's being called a lot nowadays, and the shamanic toad. So it's looking at, you know, the use of 5-MeO in some of the ayahuasca brews, like the sequoias use and whatever. So I just wanted to preface that and launch it today. So thank you.
Awesome. So let's talk a little bit about that and maybe throw to Dan. Because Dan, you've been into toads for a long time. And we'll talk about this. Toads have been around for a long time, and in Western culture, at least since the 80s at least, one of the first books on the toad medicine came out in the US. And it has been around. 5-MeO-DMT somehow escaped under the Analog Acts being made illegal until 2011, January 19, 2011. Probably as a repercussion of, tryptamine paralysis, as James Orrick was thinking with the authorities. But for some very little, you know, cosmic reason, it was legal for all through the 80s, 90s and noughts. And it's been around. And Dan, you've had some experience with toads, you know, in the past. It's now become a bit of a cultural phenomenon, but not just the toads, but with other indigenous tribes like the Sequoia, which Dean just mentioned. Could you maybe give us some background cultural information on that?
Sure, thanks, Ray. What's become apparent with botanists and now molecular sciences is that the brain chemicals that we're talking about, because it is neurochemistry, are quite pervasive and are used right across the board through the plants, animal kingdom, fungi, and of course humans. So serotonin occurs across the board, as do these tryptamines. And they first started looking for tryptamines to see where they were. They very soon decided to look where they weren't. And therefore there's been this whole idea of the spirit molecule, but there's a very interesting relationship between the 5-MeO dimethyltryptamine and dimethyltryptamine in terms of the natural cascade in the body. The most common use of, or the most common place it was found, was used to be in yahe. So yahe, for those of you who don't know, is a brew like ayahuasca, but different. Ayahuasca, you use a vine, Banisteriopsis caapi, and a rubiaceae coffee bush family plant called Psychotria viridis for your tryptamine-containing compounds. Yahe is actually a combination of two different vines, and the difference in the tryptamines is that in the yahe vine you have 5-MeO-DMT, but you also have another molecule called bufotenine, and bufo is the toad. So bufotenine is a molecule that occurs in the plant that's related to the toad, and the interesting thing is that where this plant grows is where the toad is endemic. And when I say the toad, I'm talking about the toad that comes from Peru, but is now coming down the eastern seaboard of Australia, Bufo marinus. And due to one obscure text, there was this idea that bufotenine was not psychoactive. It's now been shown that bufotenine is highly psychoactive. It's just not psychoactive for animals. It is for humans. And this is a really interesting thing. Of course, the toads coming down here, everyone knows of stories of wildlife eating the toads and dying. Humans, on the other hand, do not experience that as a toxic effect, but more as a psychoactivity. And so, just to put in context, the 5-MeO is in Yopo, it's in toads, it's in this vine that's had long, long traditional use.
Then can I just ask, is the bufotenine in the toad, the local toads, is it orally active, or is it combusted? When it's combusted and smoked, that it actually has a psychoactive effect?
No, I believe it's orally active, but it shifts as well. It's just not orally active like the 5-MeO. The 5-MeO is a very potent, light-reaching tool. The bufotenine is just much more twisted, and it's a synergist. Once you put the bufotenine and the 5-MeO together, you get the legendary yahe. And the yahe is much stronger than the ayahuasca, sort of pound for pound, so to speak.
Tell me, what do the sequoia, how does their cosmology reflect the potency of 5-MeO in the yahe?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Well, how from my understanding, I know you've told me this before, but they work with, they call the heavenly beings, and it's like the light that the one bits of the 5-MeO in the brew takes them to certain cartographies of inner space, which are different from the normal, perhaps.
So the sequoia, and of course Jonathan Miller Weisberger is going to be speaking tomorrow. I think he's going to talk a lot about them because he works with them in Ecuador, but they use this yahe and a slight variation, yahi. And they say that this plant was left with them by a tribe or a culture that used to live on Earth and no longer does. And when they left, they actually left this plant for them to communicate with them, so that the sequoia or the sikupai, they drink this plant and then they wait for the heavenly beings to arrive, and when they arrive, they sing to them and speak to them in their language, and then the heavenly beings guide them through this incredible labyrinth of different dimensions. And so their whole way of drinking is quite different and quite profound. And as I mentioned, it's extremely strong. And the 5-MeO that I've experienced in my life, which has been plant-based, from this vine and from the toad, is, I'd say, it's virtually identical in how it works. It's out of a cannon. You don't have time to be fearful of dying, and before you know it, you may have died and been born thousands of times. You spend a moment in this place, this white light, and it seems like this effortless nowness where it seems like thousands of years. go by, and then something happens and all of a sudden you're back in the body and you're like, oh, all right.
Speaking of that, so let's hear from Joelle Dorman. What's your experience been with the medicine of 5-MeO? It's subjective experience.
Recap the 1,000 years, just briefly.
Yeah. What happens to you when you go out into that experience?
Well, I'm not sure I can verbally explain, actually. For me, I was really blessed early, mid last year, to go with Rack to Mexico, guided by Octavio, and spend some time with the Seri tribe in the Sonoran Desert and share an amazing ceremony on the sacred land on Tiburon Island. And yeah, I'm not sure if I can expand much more on Dan. Okay, I'll try. So there's like a increasing of frequency vibration, a lot like entering the DMT space. So puncturing through timelines or dimensions for an eternity, and arriving at a space that is all oneness, and what I equate with the place that I originated from as a soul. Interesting, like full 360 degree awareness, being many very, very loving, aware, present, supportive beings there, ancestors, the whole posse. Everything at once. I feel like I'm doing a disservice even trying to explain. On the journey back.
Let me butt in. Let me give a riff. Okay, go.
Okay, you can do your thing after that. And home, like coming home, totally, totally familiar. Yes, of course. This is me, and yet not me. Total, no duality, no ego. Like the drop is the ocean. So I was the ocean. I am God, and that full connection to everything. And then coming up, and I'm going to cry, it's so beautiful, coming out of that and having, what was the Seri chief's name? Don Antonio. So Don Antonio shaking his rattle with Don Chapo, the shaman, basically. Don Pancho, Octavio's guide, mentor. Octavio, and just being sung back in from that high one place back into this little three-dimensional body, and just taking that medicine in, grounding it in, bringing back that remembrance that stays with me now, so I can feel it in my body even as I describe it. Yeah. And so I feel as if from that ceremony, the ceremony hasn't stopped basically since then. There's a little bit of forgetting and remembering, but it's there, the pathway is set, the full remembrance is set, and also feeling very welcomed back into the tribe by the people of that land. And we had Lazarus the Toad travel with us for the week. I'll go into that later, but I'd like to speak about toad preservation later on in the panel. Thank you.
Thank you for the beautiful sharing. This is the thing, it is incredibly emotional, as many entheogenic experiences can be. And I almost was going to say, I don't even think it's a... like these words, right? Like entheogens, drugs, catalysts, whatever. I think that this 5-MeO space we go to is home. you know, you use the word God, which creates a equal and opposite cultural dissonance for many people. Whatever you want to call it, unified field, source consciousness, white light. In my experience, okay, here's a little riff. This was April last year with Octavio. Consciousness unfolds like a lotus petal into a white, white pool of becoming. Everything is here and it swallows me whole. The drop returns to the ocean and there is no longer an I left to remember being separate. I'm fading in and out of the white, drowning in the remembrance, and what's left of my ego is panicking, split apart, bleeding, soul stretched between all points in the space-time singularity. And at that exact moment, I am held. And what I was held by, and this could bring up an interesting next point, there's many people who are experiencing this medicine, and it is still young in the West, even with practitioners like Octavio and many, many other practitioners I've met in the last year, getting dosages, working with synthetic or with natural sources, working in a shamanic modality or a sort of psychoanalysis modality. All these pathways are correct if they're done in integrity, but we're sort of still learning, and many people are actually getting overdosed. If you go into that full breakthrough white light immersion, that is the value, and it can have a very cathartic somatic body effect. There's been some really interesting academic work published on tryptamines, both NN and 5-MeO, with immunomodulation and what it does to the body. And I know Dan's got a bit of a riff about this to talk about the cascade in the brain and how that actually comes down to the body. And Joe Slater, who's another one of the presenters here at Samara, has a lot of more information about this. But within the oceanic dissolving remembrance of that space, it is, for me, it was the pure vibrational field of love and unconditional love and home and that G-O-D word or whatever you want to call it. And it's built in to our wetware, to us. It's there. It's not even about the toad or about the synthetic or about the plants. It's about us and our connection to home. But I wanted to riff off that and ask the panelists if they have any thoughts on the differences between the synthetic version of 5-MeO-DMT and the natural organic source in its different forms.
I'll answer that. I've worked with all of them. I've had extraction from a plant, I've had synthetic from China, and I've had the toad as well. All of them are divinely beautiful, divinely fucking beautiful. The main difference I see from the plant and the toad, the entry and the exit is completely the same. As soon as you blow that smoke out, as soon as you pull that smoke in and you blow that smoke out, you dissolve. There is no hanging on. It doesn't matter how strong you are. It doesn't matter how many psychedelics you've done. You cannot hold on, you know, which is beautiful. It's great to let go. And both of them the same. They both have a little bit of a different fractal when your eyes close over with the fractals, and a little bit different with that. Inside, I feel like when I smoke the plant-based one, I am absolutely embraced by God as God in the field of God. Where if I feel with the toad, I am embraced by God in my own self. I see the two differences. There's a guy that actually, I can't remember who he is, and you might know this. Someone talked about the power and the glory with DMT, and it was putting 90% DMT with 10% 5-MeO-DMT, which is the power and the glory. I actually think the power and the glory is 5-MeO-DMT from the plant and 5-MeO-DMT from the toad mixed together to take it into that that source consciousness, to feel the power fully from that love in that God, and also from the toad.
What about the synthetic?
Sorry? The synthetic one was the one that embraces me completely into God. I find the synthetic one as a much more spiritual, religious-based dropping, where I find the toad one a much more powerful for me as Shannon here on this plane. The other one seems to come back with a little bit more trauma as well, the integration, because it's hard to come back when you've just experienced that full-blown God as God. The toad seems to come back more primordial. The toad is the only thing that I've had out of all the psychedelics that I've ever done in my life that actually feels like it should be inside me. It feels ancestral, it feels primordial. It feels like it is meant to be part of me, and when I have it, I have huge guttural growls that go right through me. I move and I bounce around like I've never, ever, ever, ever moved before. And when I come back from the plant-based one, to actually stand up, I have to get my bearings and I have to actually stand up and then like, all right, cool. Where with the toad, I'll bounce up and I'll jump over every single one of you in a second. It's a different coming back. I also, everything I'm saying as well is absolutely personal. These are from my experiences and it could be absolutely different for every one of you. What was I going to say? I think someone else wants to jump in. Yeah.
I've experienced both the synthetic and the toad in its different forms, and it's more, for me, to use a browser analogy, it's like, you know, Safari and Firefox. There's almost no difference. There's a slight qualitative difference, but it goes to the same spaces, and you're right. There can be, in our shamanic culture, a bit of a, you know, looking down upon things that are synthetic, but if you're getting a pure pure sample of the synthetic 5-MeO, it really does go to that very direct, pure space as well, and I think it can be integral to work with. Also, I think we're learning culturally with many different practitioners I've talked to recently, the synthetic can be measured a lot more easily, and you can get the right dosage, correct response for the client to guarantee they're going to go to a certain threshold. I mean, I was talking about before the white out and the full dissolution. Different practitioners, there's a guy in the States who does some work, and he does a method of not just the full breakthrough, but he calls it the bottoms up, and it's like working from smaller doses to retain some egoic functionality and relax into that and have it just parked back there to be able to be more aware and integrate and be aware of it. So you're not having that full death rebirth and that dissolving. Like a lot of times with the white out, with the big dose, you're having a physiological response, but if you don't remember it, there may be a few seconds going into the event horizon of it where you're going into it and then you're gone and you come back and there's not really a lot of conscious memory for the integration of what the benefit is of that experience. So there's different practitioners experimenting with this and doing that bottoms-up method and smaller doses, which can be a lot more measurable for the participants with the synthetic. With the toad medicine, there's been some consternation around the science and trying to figure out the percentage of the bufotenine and the 5-MeO and whether the bufotenine does or does not convert to 5-MeO when combusted, which seems to maybe not be the case. We are an organisation I'm working with, Terra Incognita, sponsored a bioassay with Paul Daly, who is the chemist who took over Sasha Shulgin's lab, and he did a sample of Octavio's medicine, which when you're getting the samples from the toads, it's from a wide array of toads, and just like the plants, we know with the tryptamines and the acacias, in different phases of their life cycle in a season or even within a day, there are different concentrations of those tryptamines in the living organism of that entity, and so within these toads, within toad season, and they only come up from underground for like 2 or 3 months of the year in the wet season. There's different concentrations of both bufotenine and 5-MeO. But in this case, with the bioassay, it was almost 100% 5-MeO DMT, which means the practitioners who have been giving that dosage of the organic toad medicine, thinking that it is only going to have 1/3 of the effect, they've been giving people a full dose, like 100 milligrams is 100 milligrams instead of like the 30 that they've been thinking. So there are benefits to the synthetic if it's a pure source to use that in mind.
With the synthetic, it's good to start at the actual normal dose, which is about 0.018. And then once you've had that initial dose, then you can keep dropping it down to find your own personal best. I went from 0.018 to 1.5, 1.4, 11, 0.008. Now that takes me to the same space, and I can keep it that space. The other thing to be really, really aware of with this psychedelic is that once you do it, all other psychedelics and everything else in your life work better. It opens you up to absolutely everything. I've talked about large doses over this weekend. I'm someone that used to go to doofs that we go to and take 10 drops of acid. Wonderful, had a great night. Now I'm petrified to do that after 5-MeO. I'll do it by myself, but not out at a festival or something. I usually take one or two and see where I'm going because it didn't just be that overwhelming now. It's opened me up completely to all my psychedelics, which is beautiful. I don't have to take as much. But I have to be more aware of how I'm doing everything and to be cautious in that sense.
I'd just like to say that I am just personally drawn to the organic. I don't have a judgment on those who explore the synthetics, but my interest is in the refinement of definition so that there's clarity when a practitioner or a facilitator is giving, that they're very clear about what they are giving. I think that's very essential that you're well-informed and not misinformed, and I have heard stories about misinformation. So I would just advise that you are really clear about who has provided the substance and that they really understand the dosage and they understand the origin point. I think that's a big part of clarifying the effects of these medicines.
Let's pick up on what Shannon said to us, the panel. This sensitivity idea, basically Yeah, there's something very unique in the 5-MeO if you have that full breakthrough, which, because we have the endogenous 5-MeO DMT in our brains, it's there waiting to be activated. And once it has activated, it feels like those neural pathways are on. And as you said, on any other entheogenic activity or even modality, I've had, after April with Octavio, you know, sessions in Peru 10 days later, 3 hours in the space on the ayahuasca. But eventually what I realized as well is not just the entheogen. For me, it was a heart-based response. When I'm in heart chakra activation, it would come on really, really strongly. And I know that a lot of the members of the community here in Byron Bay, we're talking about the integration, this sensitivity to this pathway and the endogenousness, I think what it's revealing within us is that we have this capacity, that, you know, we are the medicine and the connection to this source. But what are people's thoughts on this sensitivity and how have they coped integrating that, and have they had toad flashbacks, for want of a better term? Has there been any experiences of that, anyone on the panel?
Yeah, I am definitely more sensitive. I've been working with, I've been connected to entheogens for quite a few years now, since my early 20s, and was working with other plants earlier than that. So I've had out-of-body and psychedelic experiences since I was 7 years of age. And since experiencing the 5-MeO DMT, I have definitely culled back on my consumption. I'm not nearly such a fiend. I don't feel a sense of necessity nearly as much as I used to. I used to turn up because I felt like it was necessary for my recalibration and for my highest consciousness, and you know, I'm really interested in how these entheogens are shaping our evolution in society as humans. You know, how are we walking on this earth? And so I would turn up to my church more frequently. And now I'm finding that my church is in daily life. It's in the consciousness of my dreams. It's in how I put my feet on the earth when I first wake in the morning. It's in the sky above me and the life force that comes from this moment. And I return to entheogens to be reminded that my daily life, this moment, is the ceremony that I've been seeking.
Just on the the sensitiveness and what I've just observed also through toad testimonials, some feedback there is some people getting into that toad space endogenously, you know, by going into like a meditative state or whatever. And I think that's possibly the next stage that we may go to with this. We reduce it down to such a point, and then and our pathways are open to a point where we are, I know it sounds crazy, but, you know, we merge with God. We merge with the oneness of all. And an interesting thing that happened just yesterday when we were doing the breath workshop, I was stunned in a way to realise that just through breathing, I went into like a full like ayahuasca DMT state, just through taking breath and just through breathing, and you know, I could feel the releases coming out, and as I walked out of there, I could barely walk, and this is just from breath. So you know, I think what happens is it opens opens pathways you know, to source that will keep opening. And the more we work both with the medicine but also with other ways too of tuning into that openness, then you know, I think anything's possible. I'm excited to see what you know, what telepathic, you know, just what sort of abilities which are latent within us, which I believe, you know, ayahuasca, but also, you know, probably the toad as well, is opening, you know, the door to limitless possibilities. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if next year, you know, we're levitating up at this point while we're telling you the story, you know.
Just on sensitivity, I can feel there's quite a lot of interest in the room for toad, and I'd like to just encourage a lot of spaciousness around that. So for me, my first experience after the ceremony, I didn't actually sleep for about a week. And my body was moving in this kind of funny, jerky way, integrating the energy coming down. And so that's my experience. I'm not saying it'll be yours, as Shannon was saying, but just to have to make sure that there's plenty of support, plenty of space, plenty of nature, plenty of connection there, because it's huge. And something we're talking on, the difference of the synthetic and the toad, there, it feels to me like there's this toad spirit tsunami about to pour. And there's a lot like Dean was saying with the ayahuasca a few decades ago, and unlike the vine and the plants of the Amazon, there's very limited resource of this toad in a very particular area of the desert. So yeah, to be mindful of, it just reminded me of Greenpeace's fish thing. Like, where did you get this toad? Is it ethically sourced? Like that kind of level is necessary, because there's, I just feel it's coming, and maybe there is a place for synthetic in the amount that will be consumed.
I'll just go on with the endogenous part. We were here the other day and we talked about bigger doses versus microdosing. We talked about endo as well, which I had to find out what endo meant, because endogenous. The sensitivity is overwhelming for a lot of the things, but not just that, and I'm going to be quite rude in a little sense, but I've had other experience where it has been endo in that sense. My first one was at an EGA conference a couple of years ago, when a guy gave me a massage and it popped my kundalini, if it was that, where I had a 40-minute orgasm on the ground where every single cell of my body is exploding in orgasm in front of hundreds of people. I had the same thing from a girl going down on me, and she got a special little love heart because I was overwhelmed. I came back to her going, fuck yeah, I did that. I've also had it from riding to the beach in Mexico, when I took one tab of acid in the heat, humid heat like this, and I drove to the beach with two girls, and it kicked in. Same thing, full body orgasm, my whole body's exploding in orgasm, which is divinely beautiful to feel, but really fucking uncomfortable if you're in a wrong space or you're around people and I don't have support, or someone sees me, I'm there having a fit on the ground. They don't know that I'm actually in bliss, you know, and that scares me a little bit when I'm out in those places. I've had it at Burning Man from riding across one side of Burning Man to the other, got to the other side and then, oh shit, it's kicking in, I could feel it kicking in. So then I had to ride all the way back, got all the way back over there, started having my little fit on the ground. Two friends came to help me. I ended up grabbing one of her hands, putting it on my dick, had no idea what was going on. Then woke up to her hand on my dick, was like, oh, what the fuck's going on? Walked out, had a great night. I'm standing in front of one of the stages, and I'm listening to Hayoka, and it's like, cool, Hayoka. Then all of a sudden, reality just fell away. It just went to black. Little black little cubes just falling away, and everything went black. I'm like, oh, shit. And then all of a sudden, it just starts coming back. I'm like, oh, cool, Hayoka again. Nice. You know, I start bouncing, and then it just fades away again. For me, those things are fine. I've dosed the shit out of myself over those years, and those experiences aren't too traumatic. But I've literally gone around the world for the last 6 years meeting practitioners and people that have had this experience, and it can be overwhelmingly traumatic for those people that have had that. The not sleeping afterwards can last up to a few months for people, that they're not getting that support network. And there are several practitioners around the world that are not giving any support to the people afterwards. That is fucking horrible. Right? That is the only thing I'm against. This needs support. The people that I give ceremony to become my friend. You've heard me now talk. I don't sell my ceremony. So when you become that, you become my friend. You become someone that I want to see you grow. I want to see you change, and I want to be part of that growth and your change. But you have my support 24/7 after that. And not everyone around the world is doing that. So be very careful who you go with and who you choose. Look to how much they support.
I just want to follow up on that endo thing and the sensitivity thing just really quickly. It's mutating really quickly out there in Western culture with a lot of good people working with this medicine. There's crews that I know of have been working with Vipassana meditators and doing meditation and medicine with the toad medicine. And these modalities, these integration skills and these things... It's not just about... This is about the 5-MeO and the God molecule, and it's about our brains, and it's about our connection to Source. And Source has always been connected to us, and previous cultures, all the Hindu, the Sanskrit, all those type of yogic cultures, the meditation, they have incredibly detailed consciousness maps, you know, with terminologies and understandings and practices, and they'll tell you this is a samadhi state or a sub-samadhi state, or, you know, it's all been documented, and it's coming around again full circle. And I feel that the 5-MeO integration and the sensitivity endo is really where it's at, and it's like we're being groomed by source through these catalysts to remember that we can do this, and endo is just the open door back to back home. Let's go to Maya.
I just want to talk from that perspective of endogenous. For me, the flashbacks, as they are often referred to, it's not what I believe. I do believe it is my natural body state, my natural flow of consciousness. And when it happens for me, and it does, it's beautiful, it's blissful, and it calls me to be refined in myself. It calls me to be very conscious of my grounding and my mind, my breath, the way I'm holding myself in relation to that moment is really important. And so I can have those experiences and drive a car. It's fine for me. It's not something I would say is essentially okay for everybody. If it happens for you and you're driving, pull over. But my point is that it is possible for this to become comfortable and recognize the innate state.
So we started talking about practitioners. Now, this has been exploding pretty quickly around the world. It doesn't necessarily, how we talked about the Sequoia, there's Yopo in the Amazon as well. There is a lot of historical evidence with the toad throughout Mesoamerica. There don't seem to be any extant tribes which remember this culturally in the modern day without it having been kickstarted by other people. But, you know, the toad is one of the sacred totems of different, you know, the toad, the jaguar. Ralph Metzner wrote that recent book about it. And the serpent, you know, these are three of the major totems of Mesoamerica. And the toad is archaeologically and anthropologically throughout lots of many different cultures around Mesoamerica. And it has been out there. But what do people think? There seems to be, as I mentioned before, there's like a Vipassana meditation stream. There's a shamanic stream of different practitioners who work with, as a shamanic modality, sort of more traditionally with sort of songs and rattle and things like that. There's the synthetic and there's just the holding space. What are some of the panelists' thoughts on the different containers we can create for working with this medicine?
Just before you jump onto that, I'd love to share a little bit more about the sensitivity and the endo. Because I think there's a lot in the sound signature. I had a conversation once with a toad. I think his name was Ritak, and he told me a story about their bodies are, they look quite grotesque to humans, but that body is actually like an avatar. These beings actually inhabit a different dimension, and it's like them having a drone or an avatar in this dimension. And so if you watch a toad, you'll see they'll like hop along and they'll stop, and it looks like they've checked out altogether. And then all of a sudden they're back and they hop off. And when I lived with a couple of Colorado river toads, Bufale virus, in London in the early 90s, what was uncanny was whenever I was engaging in a psychoactive substance, and maybe it was at the peak of that substance, the toads were totally in that. That's when they came alive, and they would hop out and sing. And it's almost as if they knew that they were navigating that space. The first time it happened, it was just like coincidence. You know, they hopped out, and I remember I'd taken a whole lot of mescaline. They hopped out, and as they sang, they sing the song like dot 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 dot, and it just ratchets the dimensions to a particular place. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. But it was only when it happened again when I realized that that was one of the things they share. And so I'd come back from drinking ayahuasca in 2000 in Peru, where the toads are everywhere. As evening comes, there's just hundreds of Bufo marinus, which have a similar song but slightly different. And I think that sound signature is related to the ayahuasca and a lot of the iconography where you're seeing the toad and the jaguar and the serpent. The toad's medicine it literally creates an energetic field. It's the psychoactivity, especially of Bufo marinus, may not necessarily need to be taken. It's an endo-type experience. And so I'd had a very powerful ayahuasca experience with a shaman called Don Martin, and at that time I was sitting in the Maloca and I heard the toad singing, but I didn't realize what it was. It was just really familiar. But as they amplified, one started and then more and more, and they sing, as you can hear them now in the landscape in Australia. It was like someone had turned on a light in the forest. The whole forest literally lit up in this like orange light, and the trees started telling a story that the sounds of the forest, the insects and the birds, that those were actually the audio sounds of the trees. And so any insect that was eating the trees could then tell the story of that tree. And they all started singing this really intense song together as one sound. And it was one of the most incredible experiences of my life. But it was only when I came back to Australia and I was in Upper Wilson's Creek and I listened to the recording of that ceremony. And when the toads started to sing, I ended up going into a spontaneous ceremonial space. And an Amazon curandero came up to me and he had his hands cupped and he offered them to me and he said, this is a gift for you for the end of time. And I just looked at his eyes. He was clear as you know, another person standing right in front of me, and he opened his hands and there was a toad sitting on his open hands, and the toad jumped out, and when it landed on the land, it landed on Australia. And then it jumped, and as it jumped, it became two, and then four, and then it just kept on exponentially growing in numbers. And he said that he was explaining to me in a type of telepathic language that the toads were bringing they were heralding or bringing the sound signature for the end of time, and that time was going to collapse. Time as we know it was going to collapse and start again. And that was happening. The toads, as they came down the eastern seaboard, were going to sing the song to the acacia fields. And as the acacia fields reawoken, it would be a signal for the end of time. And so that was one of the most powerful endo experiences I had, and that was the sound that the toad was making. And so just to be able to share that with people, to understand that the toads that are here are part of a prophecy. The same prophecy in Bunjala in this area exists, that now is the end of time and the dreaming collapses and starts. It ends here and starts here again. And this was, funnily enough, from a totally different angle, this was an Amazonian story of the same prophecy.
Okay, we've only got about 10 minutes left, so we're going to try to get into some of the... Thank you, Dan. The other juicy bits we haven't covered yet. We'll talk about practitioners in a sec, but that brings up, Dan, this whole idea of the toads, and you talked about avatars, which sort of bleeds through to entities or spirits or this spiritual realm. And one of the other commentators who's going to be talking about 5-MeO-DMT is Samara's Martin Ball, who takes a more, I guess, sort of, how would you describe it, rationalist, mechanistic, non-dual approach to it. And it's saying that, sure, we've got the here and now, and we've got this creation of this world and this reality frame, and then we have this source-originating reality. But Martin doesn't seem to believe that, for instance, the toads and the avatars and the entities, that there is any ecology of spirits in between source and this reality. Does anyone on the panel have thoughts about how 5-MeO specifically relates to entities and the source and where we are here on this planet?
In my perspective, it's not what we need to be focusing on. I think it's really lovely, like what Dan's just shared is a really beautiful wisdom to carry inside and to share with the community. That kind of thing is really beautiful sharing, but ultimately it is between, I do believe it is an experience of the end of time that's been discussed and philosophised over for eons, it seems, and it is a collapsing in and therefore an expansion of consciousness in a whole new way. And whether or not a person experiences or interacts with entities and interprets something to be that way, ultimately that is still part of the storyline. And what I believe the 5-MeO DMT is doing is taking us direct to the source point. So those storylines are relevant in the mythological context so that we can have a foundation, but ultimately don't pay too much attention. Go for the lights.
I found it hilarious actually with Lazarus, this toad we were hanging out with. First of all, I was like, I'm so sorry. As a child in North Queensland, I was taught to kill so many of your cousins with golf clubs and all sorts. Apologies. And just, you know, and there's also in the not sleeping a week, in the dreamings, going into kind of what I would call toad spirit. And it's just so, my experience was just so neutral, so... toad, like if you look at a toad, that was the energy, just very, very still, very calm, very earthed, very... So I was, after the journey, I was quite surprised that this being, this avatar, housed this substance. Like I could imagine that, I could imagine dolphins squeezing that out or something, but toads for me seemed quite unlikely. And there was no, you know, there was natural gratitude and humility before this creature that had secreted this amazing, amazing transportation remembrance juice. And it just, it was just doing its thing. So as far as my relation with toad spirit or toad entity, very grateful, and it doesn't seem needed or wanted by the other way around.
I'll say it's been a long time now since I believed in entities or guides or anything like that. I believe in source and I believe in myself. When I say that there aren't any entities in anything, I'm not saying that to take away your power of things that you might see or you might believe. I actually believe if you're having an entity in front of you or if you're having a guide in front of you, that's your own self projecting that image out there so it can tell you the lessons you need to know, because it's too hard for you to understand that the lessons are coming from yourself. You are the most powerful thing out there. There is nothing more powerful than you. Don't give your power away to other people, to other shamans, to other guides, to other anything. If you're feeling the energy off that plant, you're feeling the energy off the plant. It's not the plant's energy, you're feeling it, because the plant has got energy in that sense, but it hasn't got a spirit. You're feeling your own power. If you think, ah, this plant can do this, and you think the plant's talking to you, no, it's just you going into the collective consciousness, understanding that you have that power of recollection in that sense.
I'd like to give another perspective on that. Yeah, it's I agree with a lot of what was just expressed. However, like I said, I've been having out-of-body and entheogenic experiences since I was a child. When I was 7 years of age, I experienced an immense trauma, shot out of my body, brought into a light akin to toad light, embraced by voices and sounds. I got to see my body. I could see what was happening to it, but I wasn't feeling it because I was very separated from the experience of the body. And I was taught, like you mentioned, Rack, about the levels of consciousness in the different lineages. I was met at the age of 7 from a family who maybe took me to church once in my life. I met a Buddhist monk, I met conscious beings, and I was guided. I was told very directly about reincarnation. I was shown what karma is, and I experienced a very intimate relationship with the natural landscape where I was. So from that moment onwards, I was receiving direct contact and communication through the plants, through rocks, through the ocean, in the air, with the sky, in myself as well. And ultimately, it is all me. All of this, if we go into the holographic theories around that or notions around that. So I do bring it all back in, and yet in the experience of being human, I've had direct relationship with spirit from plants.
You know, I just like to throw a curveball as well. Like, central source is somehow central source and yet distributed through all points in time and in us, and is everything and is creation at the same time. And we are all one. And it's, you know, pulling back this curtain of samsara and illusion and revealing. And around the event horizon, if I could use that term, of central source, there I have had experiences with maybe ancestors or those who have gone before, and maybe some of these previous cultures who have left us in the physical form. And perhaps this is a natural progression of the species as we mature into our galactic ecosystem and our full potential and the full remembrance. And yeah, no, it's all up for grabs. This culture is rapidly evolving. It's rapidly metabolizing back into our shamanic sort of communities. And as some people have mentioned, let's be very careful, because it's very, very sacred. And we've seen and we've talked about issues with other modalities like ayahuasca and things like that, and the growth vectors and the issues around that with duty of care and having a safe practitioner and integration, and all of these things are very, very much present in 5-MeO culture as it spreads around the world. So please do your homework. Don't chase it. It's not necessarily, it's this, we've, you know, there's danger in glamorizing all of this as well. This is an experience which is profound. All the entheogens are, and all is going according to some type of celestial divine plan, I believe. And so everything is happening at the right unfolding. Let's just move forward carefully as a culture with that support and with that awareness, I guess. I think we... Do we have any more time? Questions? There are.
We can all speak healing at the same time. Hey, let's go.
Absolute all sorts of healing in every positive way. And it aligns you with your true centre. If you have passions in your life, you'll follow those passions more strongly. If you have things that you want to achieve in your life, you'll achieve them more strongly and more powerfully. They'll come forward in your thoughts. You'll want to do them.
Yeah, it's all the same. Like, if you are in love, it's the most incredible medicine. So any experience that connects you to yourself and gives you this experience of like orgasmic bliss of being connected, which that's all it is. That experience of orgasmicness is how you would feel ordinarily if you were connected 24/7. That's what the clear light experience that all the Tibetan Buddhists are talking about, and that eternal bliss, that is your birthright. You don't feel that all the time because you're disconnected. So even a small amount of that is some of the most healing thing you're ever going to go through, because your whole nervous system rewires and that affects your physiology.
Yeah, there's a cascade from the mental or those effects into the endocrine system and into the body. And there's been a lot of current research on immunomodulation and helping heal tumors and blockages. And basically doing like God's factory reset of mind, body, spirit, soul with unconditional love pouring into your vehicle. So it's hard to isolate it down to just a physical effect or just a mental effect. It's the full Monty.
I would like to say in relation specifically to the lady who asked that question, that I was recently diagnosed with potentially having mini strokes. And this medicine has definitely helped me neurologically. I've also suffered from things that people have diagnosed as fibromyalgia, etc. So nervous and neurological work is definitely benefited if approached in the right way.
Okay, well, just as we're closing up, I'd just like to let people know that I'm planning to head over to the Amazon, to the Sequoias and to the Yopo shamans. Like I mentioned, you know, got the crowdfunding campaign. I'd love some support to film that. And also, you know, there's going to be some spaces available, you know, if people want to come down to meet the Sequoias, to drink, you know. I'm organising tours with Jonathan down there, and you know, we can come and talk to me afterwards. Yeah. We've got time for a few more questions.
Yeah, I'd just really like to ask about the more so the natural death, like the natural high, like actually receiving a death dose, like because I have, and I just want to know, is there some way to figure out what the kind of dosage is, like whether it's similar to one dose of, I don't know, maybe. Like whatever it is that you guys are talking about, is there a way to figure out?
You can measure the dose to get right to the threshold and still not quite, or you can just go all the way through. You know?
But I mean, like actually, like the one that's in your head, and when you die, you receive it. Is there any way to figure out how much it you've had?
Yeah. No.
Okay.
When you extract it from cerebrospinal fluid and other things, you've got about 8, 10, 12 seconds before it's metabolized. It's very difficult to do. But having said, touching on the death thing, I fear 5-MeO-DMT less than I used to. I was about 8 years between drinks. But every time I go in, there is this ego thing of knowing it is the full death. It is the full death experience. I no longer really fear death because I know. Like, I just know in every intimate cell of my body, my knowing, this is it. And it's beautiful, right? Where you go when you rejoin the wave, you know, the whole thing. But it's good training. I think this is all training, as a lot of cultures have said, for the death experience, to be able to cross over when we do die and to retain consciousness. It's like we're being taught, and other cultures have done this, apparently. So I feel like we're going through this phase in our culture now. Questions?
Thank you all for taking your time in with us. Here. Can you hear?
Yes.
Okay. Is that better? Yeah. Okay. I'm really interested to hear about how it's harvested traditionally, if there's ceremony around this. I'd like to hear how it's harvested and in what conditions. I'd like to also understand a tiny bit about what we should be careful of, so that we can maintain the integrity of the populations, because it sounds like it's a very small population, so conservation, for want of a better word, Dan. And also, does it still produce its juice, its natural vitality to share with us out of the natural environment, like, for example, Cambo doesn't when you take it out of the forest? Thank you.
Yeah, I'll answer that. As someone that's been there and collected the toes as well and talked with a lot of people, the toad's going to be gone within a few years. It's going to be gone within a few years. The guys that were doing it 10 years ago and have been there every year have seen it dramatically decline, especially in the last 3 years. It's going from their fields. There's not many of them. Not only that, you have the Mexicans over there with the mentality of Australians as well. They just want to run them over in the street. There's people going over. They have six glands on their back, two on their shoulder, two on their back legs here, and two on their small thighs. When you secrete those glands, that's their venom and that's their power. If an animal comes and attacks them and you've taken that gland, it cannot protect itself. When I collect them, I take two, at the very most three glands from what they're doing, and I leave them with three for that space. There's no need to be greedy with it, and there are some very, very greedy people out there. The toads only come out for 1 month of the year. The rest of the time, they're hibernating under the ground. They lose their sensitivity with the potency when they're put into a tank. They hibernate for 11 months of the year, so when you put them into a tank, you put them in there under lights. They don't hibernate. People aren't hibernating in their tanks, and they're stealing them at the moment in huge numbers, which is horrible. I'm actually with another friend starting a small UFO place to actually just secure enough of them so we can start repopulating parts of the desert. I don't want your money or anything. I'm just telling you that so we can sort of secure it. It's for people here in Australia. It's for my family and my friends for the rest of our lives. But it is detrimental. It's not like a plant where you can just go and grab one of those seeds, take it to another country and plant it. It will not do it. You can't just bring them into other countries. You can't just put them into tanks. And they're going to go. And be really, really careful who you pick around the world to do that ceremony with. Look online. There's a lot out there for you to get your own information about all that sort of stuff. Who is good and who isn't bad. Who is bad. It's absolutely fucking horrible. It's been in my life for a long time, and to see it in the last couple of years has just been absolutely destructive. And there's horrible, horrible people out there that are trying to use people's money for all sorts of negative things. We're getting cut off.
I just want to say that there is a foundation that's just been established. You can go to otakglobalfoundations.org, and it is obviously a controversial area, so you're welcome to contact me if you'd like to learn more about that source. And that is with the intention of preservation of the ecosystem, primarily preservation for the animals, not just for the toad, but for the entirety of the ecosystem is the first and foremost goal, and education, so that this terrible violation that has been occurring that Shannon's talking about ultimately is taken care of. We step into some greater responsibility, we look at where our own ignorance has been, and we do ensure the survival of this sacred medicine, the sacred ecosystem from where it comes, and the peoples who are living there. So there has been damage, and there is good intention to learn from those mistakes and reverse and clear up and protect and take care of. So there is a foundation. If you'd like to know more about that, please look, come to me afterwards.
Okay, that's about all we have time for now. It's a very big subject, and I'm sure it's going to continue to evolve over future samaras and conferences around the world. So thank you to all our panellists, and thank you to the toad.
Join Toad Testimonials and Support. It's a great forum for learning more and having more conversations.
Okay, thanks. We've got a Skype person coming through for the next presentation, so please stick around. Thank you.
So, yeah, you've got a minute, but not long, to stretch your legs.